Faden.
Exterior. Interior.
Restaurant.
Bar. Club.
Day.
Night.
Action!
A restaurant fiction? Say there is not a actual fictional restaurant, bar, and club in the film, but there is, or there are many incredible food scenes. Fictional food scenes. Well, guess what? We're still reviewing them. We're still going and taking a deep dive because that's what restaurant fiction is about. And today we are doing, or we are reviewing all, but pretty much the two ultimate dining food scenes in the early to mid 90s. 1990s-ish, 94, 95, Ang Lee film, Eat, Drink, Man, Woman. That is right. My name is Monis Rose. I am the host with the most of Restaurant Fiction, and we are bringing back, that's right, we loved his, what he had to say about the gin joint Rick's Cafe from Casablanca. Jerry Ying, producer, creative actor, amazing husband, amazing dad, Jerry Ying. Because, you know, after our awesome conversation about Rick's Gin Joint or Rick's Cafe, however you want to call it, Jerry's like, when are we going to talk about Eat, Drink, Man, Woman, Monis? Because I got a lot to say about that. And I just said, when? And, you know, we're busy. Things get in the way, life happens, and suddenly serendipity happened, and Jerry and I just said, let's go, let's do this. I mean, what are we waiting for? Now is the time, because we don't know whenever, and I just saw it like yesterday for the, you know, blah, blah, blah time. I know this movie, I'm excited, let's go, Monis. And so I said, boom. No, I didn't say that. I pretty much just hit the record button. Okay, this is our conversation with Jerry Ying for the second time, and we are talking about the amazing food scenes, breaking down, especially the opening scene, especially the banquet hall scene of the Ang Lee film, Eat, Drink, Man, Woman. Go. Hello, everyone. Let me tell you a story. Let me tell you what it's like to go inside of a home, of a home-cooked meal from a Taiwanese chef, but not just any kind of Taiwanese chef. I'm talking about a Taiwanese chef who has the acumen from the banquet restaurant world, that when he is serving thousands and thousands of people, pretty much from breakfast, lunch, and dinner all of the time. Okay, let me break this down of the mindset and what kind of home-cooked meal you're going to get. All right, first and foremost, it's going to be austere. And what do I mean by that? That's not smug. That's not snobby. It just means that everything is set and just right. That means from the actual cooking methods, from the actual tools used, from the proteins used to make this amazing meal. Let's start with the tools. This chef, he's not using a chef's knife, a paring knife, an oyster shucker. No, he's using a cleaver. That's it. That's all you need. You just need a cleaver, you need a strainer, and you need a good, well-seasoned wok. That's pretty much the three. I mean, everything else is extra, but those are the three. And really, if you have two cleavers, you can bang the drums. You can bang any kind, break down any kind of protein, any kind of pork, any kind of fish, as if you're banging the drums. All right, so let's talk about the smells. The smells, well, guess what? They're fresh. Yes, they're fresh. They're pungent. They're pungent. You're going to smell a lot of ginger. You're going to smell a lot of shrimp and fish oils. You're going to smell garlic, and you're going to smell just that fry oil, and that's okay. And let's talk about the food. Well, the food is going to be fresh. And what do we mean by that? Well, it was either caught, It was killed, it was butchered, and then it was prepared in hours. Finally, let's talk about the food. Now, there are going to be dishes upon dishes upon dishes. The two that stood out, though, the three-cup chicken. This three-cup chicken, and yes, it's one of those proteins which is plucked. It is killed, it is plucked, it is, you know, butchered. And then, you know, and then this weighs in the clay pot. Well, it is so good that you want to just even suck on the bones as if they're lollipops. The pork, I mean, just in the way it's prepared. It is first boiled, and then it is fried, and then it is finally braised for a very, very long time. Now, there, what is the point of all this? What is the point? Well, the point is there is love. There is love in the extra time and the finesse and all of that knowledge in preparing this food. So when it is served to the family or to friends, but especially the family, I mean, there is really no saying I love you or hugs and kisses. It is to the food. And it's almost as if this food is a truth serum that whatever you want to know, including whether it be your family and friends, it's spit out because the food is that good. Now, there's two notes here. There's two notes. Number one is there is a rule that if you are just, you feel weird about touching food with your fingers, then this meal or any kind of Taiwanese home-cooked meal is not for you, because the finger touching of the food and eating, it just adds the umami to every single dish and delicacy. And there are two, we tip our hats. So one, we actually do not tip our hat, and one, we do tip our hats. So the chef in the home-cooked meal, they do kill their fish and their seafood through chopsticks. We, at Restaurant Fiction, we like a one knock, one kill. So it doesn't matter if it's a fish, if it's a pig, if it's a duck, it's whatever it is. It's a twist in the neck, or it is a chop in the head. We do not. We feel it is a little more, and just in bias, it's a little more inhumane to put a chopstick through a lobster or through a fish, because then it bleeds out low and slow, and we prefer a nice clean death. That's for, please don't get iggly jiggly. But on the flip side, what we do admire is that the chef abstains from the traditional shark fin soup, that he makes a imitation shark fin soup that actually rivals real shark fin soup. If you want a whole political dialogue on shark fin soup, you can have that with me, but that's not here or there. But really, it's about the love of the meal. We're talking to Jerry Ying. Jerry Ying, the meals and the meals in general that we're talking about are from the Ang Lee film from the early 90s called Eat, Drink, Man, Woman. Jerry, what did you have to say about that meal, the food in general of Eat, Drink, Man, Woman? The floor is yours.
Hey, Manas. Great to be back on your podcast. Welcome back. Yeah, I love hearing that. There's been a lot of success with it, so great to be back. But, you know, I am going to have to start by correcting you in your wonderful introduction. They meant to cook shark fin soup, and they got some guy lower on the totem pole didn't know how to distinguish between real shark fin and non, and so it all frayed, and it created the emergency that brought the chef to the hotel. And so he kind of pivoted around it and made something else. But, no, they were... It's politically incorrect, and they were trying to serve real shark fin soup. But this was from the 90s, so...
It is from the 90s, you're right. And for, I'm just going to say, have you ever tried to bait, like, a lot of sharks have to die for one bowl of shark
fin soup. You know, I don't think this movie's going to get made today. It definitely might be canceled. But then again, it's things are different in Taiwan.
Absolutely, absolutely. But how else would you review, and what did you think of the food, and what did you think of the review?
I mean, first, let me just start by saying this is one of my favorite films of all time.
Yeah, how come?
You know, this film came out in the heyday, or the very beginning of independent cinema. And I was living in New York City, and so I would go to the Angelica Film Center on Houston Street, and you know you can count on whatever titles they're screening. it was, you know, like fresh out of Sundance when Sundance first started. You know, this is like the era of Robert Rodriguez, Ed Burns, Quentin Tarantino, Reservoir Dogs. And so, and I'm Chinese, you know, and I had never heard of Ang Lee. He had done a film called The Wedding Banquet that I saw after, but I went in and saw it, and it just, I mean, from the opening scenes to what the movie's about to being Chinese, watching a movie in Chinese, and then just taking me back. And that the center, the grand hotel that he's a chef at, I've been at. I've had a wedding there. My cousin got married in that hotel. So that movie has everything. And it was awesome to watch again last week. It brought back a lot of memories. And I mean, it was weird because it was actually really emotional for me. It was a lot of stuff. Maybe because I have a daughter now. I don't know. Or maybe just I was salivating over the food or missing Chinese food. It was just...
We're going to break down this answer. We're going to screw questions for a second. We're breaking this answer down. So tell me then, because I did not know, we did not know at Restaurant Fiction that dining hall was real. So tell me, yeah, how real, is this banquet hall? And for the people who have not saw the restaurant, so this this scene, it's almost like a Martin Scorsese-esque tracking shot of this kitchen, but it's not just a consumer kitchen. No, this has so many catering kitchens. It has a hotline, so many hotlines. Like, it's serving banquets, it's serving doing catering, it's doing restaurant, it's doing hotel, it's doing weddings, it's doing everything.
I got it. So let me explain something to you. I'll set the stage for you. This hotel is a monument. It is legitimately the... It would be the equivalent of like the Plaza in New York City. It is historical. It's luxury. And when Chinese have weddings, and this was like my cousin's, everyone gets to invite everyone. It'll be like 1,200 people. That banquet was for the governor's son in the movie. And so you could see how many tables were there. So that is a kitchen trying to serve top-end food to 1,000 people. So it's a monster. But I mean, you know... I remember from, I think I was 12 or 14 years old being in there. It's just bigger than anything you can ever imagine. It's huge.
Right. So, okay. And then you mentioned, you know, it's, and we're going to go back, we're going to backtrack. Don't mind. We're just going to go back and forth. So you mentioned it's a lot more meaningful now as a father to a daughter and an awesome daughter. Do you mind explaining, telling me more about that?
Well, I mean, the movie is an amazing story. You know, it's centered around food in terms of how the family gets together and has dinner. But throughout the movie, they have these different scenes, and he has three daughters, you know, and it's classic. One daughter is more homely, stays at home. One daughter is incredibly business savvy and has a corporate job. And the other daughter is a young daughter, just kind of like finding young love. And so... And then it turns out that the father, who's a widower, also has his own story of love in this thing. So the whole thing is centered around family. It's centered around relationships. It's centered around East meets West. It's centered around this concept in Chinese culture of, like, you know, it's Confucianist to always respect your elders. There's all these elements, all these classic elements are in this movie, but it's all centered around the dinner table. That's where they come back. It starts with this incredible, and if you ever watch this film, you will salivate. He will walk you through his home kitchen of how he prepares every single meal. And yes, they kill the fish with chopsticks. It's actually a pretty intense scene, but, you know, they stick the two chopsticks in the mouth and he bangs it through. I don't know if that causes the fish to die slowly. I have no idea. But anyways, it's a beautifully gorgeous meal made for like 50 people to serve just him and his three daughters. And by the end, and I don't want to give it away, there's a reversal, and it ends at the dinner table as well. So it all wraps up really nicely. And I think maybe being a father now to a daughter, it made it all really emotional for me. So,
how did it... All right, so you can tell me about your recent watch or the 1994 watch, but how did Eat, Drink, Man, Woman inspire you? Inspire you creatively, inspire you professionally, personally, whatever, wherever you want to take the answer.
You know, when I watched it the first time, it was more for the experience. I wasn't even in film when I watched it the first time. You know, I was just a 23-year-old or 22-year-old in New York City. No aspiration to be in film. Wasn't even acting at that point. Watching it now, it's just so inspiring from a story standpoint. What I really noticed about Ang Lee was how many storylines he can cram into one film and seem to give every character depth and an arc and a twist. And sometimes he does it with just a close-up. Sometimes he just does it with a quiet scene. But he just seems really deft at, like, very economical. Without trying to cram everything in, he's using these bursts to tell you everything you need to know about the character. He's using these little images to just sort of give you the tone. There's no dialogue. It's just a lot of quiet cuts. Quiet cuts on just the characters. It's really fascinating. I would love to be able to write a story like that. I would love, and like Crash is Crash. Okay, whatever. You want to weave all those stories in? Whatever. This is like masterful use of, like, I would say 5 real storylines, all fully fleshed out, every character with twists. It's incredible. And it ties all up incredibly nicely at the end in a bow.
So how Restaurant Fiction, we judge food in general is, and we're going to, trust me, audience, we're going to tie this back to Eat, Drink, Man, Woman in just a second. But how Restaurant Fiction judges food in America is we base everything off of American fast food, that when we travel outside of the U.S. and we go to a fast food joint, the McDonald's or the Burger King or the KFC, et cetera, outside of the U.S. happens to always be better than the actual fast food joint within the U.S. where it was created, where it was originated. So anyway, here's the question. So there is an arc, one of the many arcs, where the youngest daughter works at Wendy's. I mean, say you're in Taipei again, or you're in Hanoi again, or wherever you're, let's just pick the one, a city in, you know, Asia, in, you know, in Eastern Asia. At what point are you, say, pivoting from traditional, authentic food from the culture, from the region, and you just want, hey, I just want a fucking McDonald's, or I just want a fucking Pizza Hut?
Well, let's see. Let me count the days, because it was on day 1, 2, 3, 4. Day 5, I went to a Burger King that was at the Vietnam airport, and it was amazing. I mean, it's just a different, I don't know what it is. It's like, it's in you, you know? Like, I don't eat fast food often here in Los Angeles, but, you know, they did a really good job, because when you're young in America, that was like, oh my God, we're going to McDonald's. And that was like the thing. Now the kids these days are like, oh my God, I want Nobu. Like these kids these days are so spoiled. Going, for us back in the day, going to Burger King was like a treat. And so I still have that urge. And so when I was in the Vietnam airport and I was like, oh my gosh, how much more pho can I have? How much more rice dish? And I just saw the Burger King and I literally kind of just beamed and went for it. And I'm not ashamed to admit that. And it was amazing. But I will say, back in the day in Taipei, like when I was 12, 15 or 18, it didn't taste right. The burgers didn't taste right. Like the McDonald's burgers, they didn't quite taste right. The fries didn't quite taste right.
Which, by the way, I believe I do know that Burger King you're talking about. My wife and I went to that Burger King because we were in the same predicament as you. We were just tired of just seeing.
Was it the one outside?
Yeah.
Right outside the domestic terminal and to the right?
Yes. We know. And it was just like, it was almost like the holy grail of like, thank you. Like, sweet Jesus, thank you. Like, this is awesome. Like, don't get me wrong, food in Vietnam all over was sensational. But man, we missed that Burger.
Yeah, and that Coca-Cola on ice.
But you have the chance to remake Eat, Drink, Man, Woman. How are you remaking it?
Oh boy, remake Eat, Drink, Man, Woman. It'd be interesting to take it into a different culture, because what's really fascinating about Eat, Drink, Man, Woman to me is how relatable it is. And I imagine what's fascinating about, for someone that's not Chinese, is to get a peek into how Chinese families operate. It'd be interesting to take this entire concept of the single father with the 3 daughters and put it into a different family, because I was laughing throughout Eat, Drink, Ram Woman, because it's all inside for me. There's a lot of inside comedy for me. So I would love to see it like maybe in an Indian family or an Arabic family, and have whoever were to remake it be true to that culture, and then I can learn more about other cultures through their family, through what food means, you know what I mean?
So do you mind giving us a little more of what that insight is? Like for us at Restaurant Fiction, we thought it was, in a way, it was comical that, hey, the father presents this delicious food to his daughters at the dinner table, but there's no grilling. There's no, how was your day? Or, you know, what trouble are you?
It's the silence that's comical, because it's so true. They sit there and how they don't communicate. And the father, you know, the fact that he doesn't speak much. And he's a legend. That actor is a legend. The fact that there's very little communication is what is funny. And, you know, one of the really funny things is the mom of the neighbor who comes back from America, and she's just a nightmare. And the way they're so passive aggressive, and she one by one goes through each daughter, and like for one, she'd be like, oh, are you married? And she'll be like, no, I'm not married yet. She's like, oh, that's fine. You know, husbands are a pain in the ass. You know, better to be alone. And then she'll go to the next one and be like, oh, you're so pretty. I'm sure you have many boyfriends. You know, don't be like your sister. She's never going to get married. Like, it's just Chinese to be passive aggressive. And then there's a shot. They cut away to like this shot of the three daughters just staring at the poor father who's like waiting at this woman's hand and feet, you know, lighting her cigarette for her. And it's just hilarious. That's inside. I can relate to every single one of those characters, especially the older ones. I can relate now to the older ones because I feel like I could be that now, but I can also relate to the younger ones because I was that.
The daughters are eating this food, and that's when all of these truth bombs are dropped. Like, boom, life change. Boom, I want to change careers. Boom, I want to do this. Boom, I'm getting, you know, boom, I'm becoming a nun. Boom, boom, boom. They eat, and then it's almost like, hey, was this food roofied with a truth serum that I'm... No,
what it is they only mention it at the last final moment. You know what I mean? And if you'll notice, and it comes because you're never suspecting which one is making the announcement. And all four of them at one point make a major announcement, even including the father. And that scene's hilarious because he gets really drunk for it. But what you'll notice is that they'll wait to the last minute and they'll muster up the courage, and then they'll have to say, I have an announcement, and it's a bomb. And then it happens the next day. You know what I mean? So they keep it all in, because one of the main things about Chinese culture is we don't want to upset people. We don't want to, especially when people are struggling, we don't want to add worry on top of their lives, especially a father or a parent, you know. It's one of the worst things about Asian culture, by the way. They don't tell you anything. You know, like I was flying back from Michigan after finals one year, and in the car ride home, my dad was like, oh, you know, very casually, oh, by the way, grandma passed away. I was like, what? And they were like, we didn't want to disturb your finals. And I was like, what do you mean? And I was like, everybody else in the family was at our bedside, and meanwhile, I'm in Ann Arbor taking exams, completely clueless. And so that is a prime example of keeping information from family.
You described so well the dinner scene for our audience. Put yourself, you get in not just one invite, but you have the open invitation to come as many times as you want to Mr. Chu's residence and experience his cooking. How often are you, knowing full well what the scene is going to be like, how tense it's going to be, and the food, how often are you coming? How often are you eating at this dinner table?
You know, you're probably eating there once every couple of weeks, once a month. I mean, Chinese families are really close, but you got to keep in mind, it doesn't matter how old you are, you're still going to sit at the kids' table. The elders will sit at their table. And then now that we have kids, the little ones will sit at their tiny little table, and we'll probably have our own table. And it's only recently that we're starting to mesh and mingle with the elders. The elder table is definitely the coolest. But when you're young, you're frightened to death of that table. But you learn, like, it's all a facade. You know, like, they use voice, tone. You know, they'll turn around, they'll yell at you. your butthole will clench up when you're a little kid. But I've seen it from the other end now. Well, they just turn around, they'll have a smile and they'll wink at you. And you realize, oh my God, you guys are putting on a front the whole time.
And you can describe the food that you remember from the film or even just personally. Like, and so what are you eating? You can, yeah, maybe that's two questions. What are you eating then from what Mr. Chu serves you? And then in general, and it doesn't matter if you're at the kids' table, at the middle of the ground table, or at the elder table.
Oh my God. I'm eating everything that he cooked. I'll tell you what I'm not eating, though. The frogs. That's got to be tough for anyone. I mean, first of all, you see the frogs on the chopping block, and then you see it boiling in the pot, and you know it's moving because of the boil, but oh my God, there's no way I'm eating that. I don't think I've ever eaten frogs. Like, yeah, that's the one I'm not eating. But everything else looked incredible. But I mean, one of the reasons why we don't cook is because the amount of preparation it takes to make Chinese food. The prep is insane. My mom would spend all day prepping for the, you know, weekend family meal. It's all day. Sometimes it would start the day before or the 2 days before. You know, they take a lot of pride in their food, but, you know, I don't have that patience.
And what Jerry is saying, everyone, is true. When we at Restaurant Fiction just even make, say, let me repeat. Do not take XO sauce, especially homemade XO sauce, for granted. Because, there are so many ways of testing not just a Chinese meal, but just a sauce. And to test someone's XO sauce, especially homemade sauce, that is an art in and of itself and time-consuming. I mean, it's a pantry good. Once you make it, I mean, it lasts, but man, just to even go through that, and it brings so much flavor to every single dish. Everyone, thank you for listening to Restaurant Fiction. If you want to know more about Jerry, well, guess what? Listen to what he has to say about Casablanca, Rick's Cafe, Rick's Gin Joint, whatever you like to call it. That is an equally awesome episode because Jerry is an equally awesome, that doesn't make sense, is just an awesome guest. And if you are listening, Jerry, to your own episode, which I hope you do, you are welcome back anytime. Third time is a charm, even though, you know, this was the sequel, kind of like T2, and the sequel is always better. Empire Strikes Back, yada, yada, yada. I'm just saying, even Temple of Doom, I'm that guy. Yes, I do like Temple of Doom a whole lot more than Raiders of the Lost Ark, but that's just me. I like the heart coming out of the guy's chest. I'm a little bit morbid, if you say that. Anyway, no, I digress. For those also who just want to know more about how awesome and badass Jerry is, well, he's on the Instagrams. He's out there. You might see him in a show or two. His projects are coming about. He is a producer, actor, an amazing creative artist. And, you know, just behind the scenes of our talkie talks, our little chit chats that have not aired, I mean, he's blowing up. I don't know what we can actually say at the moment, but you're going to see him. You're going to see his face out there. You're going to see his work out there, whether he is a part of it on screen, whether he is behind the scenes, but it's coming out there. And we are really, really happy, really, really proud of him and his family and all of that jazz. All right, I'm talking too much. If you want to hear more of me blab, well, guess what? I mean, Restaurant Fiction, we got 80-plus episodes. You can also give me a personal shout-out. It's monis@restaurantfiction.com. And just remember, nothing makes sense, and nothing ever does. Peace.
Cut to.
Exterior. Interior.
Restaurant.
Bar.
Club.
Day.
Night.